Welcome to Star Wars Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm at SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder, join us for a talk every Thursday starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444, just follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web, just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com and search for call ID 17702 or search for Starfleet Universe On Call. And of course, we also co-broadcast over on the twitch.tv network website, things like that. And so just go to twitch.tv/SFU On Call and you will find us there. You can join us, you can join the chat room and have a good old time as we hang out there. And of course, you need to contact me for any reason. My email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, my account there is also sfuoncall. And if you want to follow my personal account, because that's my podcasting account, my personal account is Paul Franz, PaulFranz. And of course, just a reminder that I am a very passionate O's fan, Catholic, and also I love tech. So if you don't like any of those things, don't follow me. And of course, I have a tertiary account called Franz Games. So if you want to keep up to date what's going on with Franz Games, you know, SFB Online and Starfleet Warlord, if there's any new games or possibly new updates for the client, you know, or anything happening on the website, you'll just follow those. They're relatively low bandwidth Twitter account. So if you want to, you can follow it and not have to worry about it blowing out your feed. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. And of course, A to B, any news from A to B? Not really. There really hasn't been anything new since last week. So it is what it is. But there's a reminder to stop by the StarForTheGames.com website. And, of course, they have multiple resources that you can have. A lot of it just free resources, including you can find the Cadet Training Manual for Starfleet Battles so that you can learn how to play Starfleet Battles. And also there's a Cadet Room on SFB Online so you can play the cadet version right there and so forth. And of course, moving forward to the SFB Online tournament, we still have the Master Tournament. The round two is going quite well. It comes online client, not much happening there in the past couple weeks. Also, moving on to the FedCom library, I haven't had a chance to really work on that much. You know, I was out of town last week, and you know, so I really haven't had a chance to get caught up this past week. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, just the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, it's me. I see Dave here, and of course, Barry. How you doing, Barry?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing?
Good. I assume you're in the States? Yeah. You actually called me.
I am.
Earlier this week.
I'm home.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
In any case, the topic for this evening for all those who are listening and watching, I brought up the topic of in the tournament, the Klingon versus the Archaeotholian, which is quite a matchup in my mind. And Barry, in the pre-show, said, agreed with me that it's quite a classic matchup. Hey, Chris. He's in the Twitch. And yes, for those of you who are listening to podcasts who don't know, and which I would be shocked, because that means you haven't been listening for very long, which would be, hey, welcome then. That is, I do pay attention to the chat room and keep an on that, so that you know, I can respond to that. It's obviously delayed a little bit because I see the chat and then it takes me a few seconds to actually respond. It's at least you'll see a response that's delayed. I know how it is because I'm watching the video from Twitch at the same time I'm recording. So it's interesting, you know. But anyhow,
yeah.
So basically what you've got is both of these ships have turn mode of B, which is makes which right. obviously just from the get or just from the turn mode itself make things interesting mm-hmm. in that unlike some matchups where the Klingon has the better turn mode, it's, you know, it no longer has that advantage. Now,
that's correct.
Of course, then we have the Klingon, which is a full, you know, heavy cruiser, meaning movement class, mm-hmm. movement cost of one, has 40 power, right? Or no, 39. 39.
39. Yeah.
Versus the Archaeotholian, which is two thirds movement. And since it has mm-hmm. two thirds movement and it has the full 24. It's got what's called, of course, called hot warp for those, you know, who play SOB, which means that in theory, you can move greater than 32 in a turn because of, for movement purposes, for a single impulse, you're considered moving greater. You got to make sure when you do a het, there's the issue with hets, which is you have to have enough warp power at that moment in time. So, for example, the Klingon,
right,
it only has 30 boxes, and its movement cost mm-hmm. one. So if it's going speed 30, it's using on that particular impulse, that means it's basically using 30 power. So if yeah. it can't do a het because that means it would have to have at least 35 warp available to it, and therefore it cannot do a het at speed 30. Now the greatest speed you can do and do a het in the Klingon, of course, is then 26 because of you can use 25 warp and use one impulse, and you always and. Just remember, people, when it comes to movement class one, if you have the impulse, use it. Because yep. of then you can explicitly, and definitely if you're doing this on paper, write it down. If it's in the client, you can also write it down. Because in the client, what you can do is you can denote that just by putting I in the energy allocation form. So it knows...
Well, there's an exception to that.
Yes.
And that is, if you anticipate that you're going to be going at that speed and you think that there's a possibility that you might do an emergency decel, a reserve impulse might come in handy.
Yes. Good point. Jeez, that's a low scoring game. Sorry. Dave gave me the score for tonight's game. Panthers at 7, Texans 6 at halftime. Talk about a low scoring game. Jeez. Crazy. But anyway, yeah. Oh yeah. If you know you're gonna be coming in like hot and heavy and you plan on doing emergency decel now. Yeah. The question is, of course, in that case, and it always is the case of anything you do in Starfleet battles, are you guessing what your opponent is doing correctly? Because mm-hmm. of you always can have the issue where you're planning on doing emergency decel because you're coming hot and heavy. Your opponent, you figure your opponent is going to be coming close because that's why you went to do an emergency decel, or because of... you figure that your opponent's gonna launch like a large volley of plasma torpedoes or a large volley of drones, and you want to be able to stop. To say in the case of like the Zinni.
Well, here's another place where you can do an emergency D cell.
Okay.
You run into the web. Emergency D cell, so you can tack shortly thereafter to get a turn to change your facing.
Right, that is true. Now, obviously, the only that means okay. I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. You're saying, instead of avoid running into the web, you're actually saying go run into the web. Correct.
You run into the web. You know you're not going to be able to avoid running into the web, so right. You run into the web. You emergency D cell.
Right.
And now you can tack.
That sounds like an excellent idea. And obviously, in that case, you also want to make sure that you have reserve warp available, too.
Because reserve warp and reserve impulse.
Right. So you can do two tacks and two impulses.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is kind of critical. The one thing you have to be careful there with when it comes to the web is that you're not going too fast, because otherwise you can break down.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
And obviously, and of course.
But if you're up.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to say, in addition to just to complete the whole thought when it comes to the web, is that also depends on the strength of the web. Most of the time, the strength of the web isn't that great overall because of, in case most players, they want to lay down the web in a W configuration.
Mm-hmm. That's right. If it's 5 hexes long, it's not a breakdown web. 4 hexes, it's a breakdown web.
Right. Exactly. And honestly, yes, I'm sorry.
The Arachiotholi in its biggest weakness is that it, for a two-thirds mover, it has very low power for a two-thirds mover.
Right, that's one thing I think I never got back to, which is the amount of power that the Archaeotholi has.
Yeah. Right, because it's got better phasers. Well, yeah, I think it's got what? How many P3s?
I forget if it's 2 or 4.
Six or something like that. Someone say. Oh, is it only 4?
I think it might be only 4. I have to double check on that one though.
Okay. It's got 7 P1s. I know that.
Yes. I thought, actually, doesn't that have 6 P1s?
Go ahead. I'm just going on memory.
Agreed. Me too, and that's why I decided it might be the best thing for me to do is actually to bring up the client.
Pull up the SSD.
To look at the SSD, because I don't have the I was dummy. I did not actually go grab my tournament module.
I'm almost certain it has 7 P1s.
It is possible. I thought 7 P1s is the Neotholian.
What's that?
I thought the one with the 7 P1s was the Neotholian with the 2 on the left side, 2 on the right side, and then 3 front half.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're right.
Okay, give me that. And this is. Okay, there's the Archaeotholian. Start game. Oops. I have to enter a name for it, I forgot. And start the game. And give me the SSD.
I seem to remember the Tholian has always had good phaser arrays.
Okay. I was wrong. Okay. The archaeotholian has 8 phaser ones. Has,
oh wow,
3 forward half left, 3 forward half right, 1 left side, 1 right side, and then we have the 4 phaser threes, which are rear extended.
So it's got the best phaser arrays you can have.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty darn good. Agreed.
Yeah.
Though, you know, obviously it only can, except for center line, the most phase you ever can fire is 7.
Right.
And well, I bet you're not going to be center line that
but
close.
But if you've got something, if you got something off the right front hex, you can fire 7P1s and 4P3s.
Yep. And of course, then we got the weird disruptor arrangement, which is 2 which are forward arc, 1 left front left, 1 right front right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the weird.
But thing. You also have the front arc webcaster, which can be used as a web fist, in which case it's more effective than a disruptor.
True. True. And that's always the one of those things about the Archeo, playing the Tholian, either Archeo or Neo, which is, what do you do with the webcaster? Because there's 2 options.
Yeah.
1, use it as terrain. You know, and I know Tholians like to do that. They like to put the W shaped web, and then come up to it and allow them to basically turn up right beside the web and fire the opponent as the opponent approaches.
Right.
So that, you know, they can get closer to the opponent and not risk as getting as much damage. Now, obviously, the problem with firing through a web is, one, the reduction, because the phasers get reduced, but also you can't fire your disruptors unless, of course, your opponent goes, right, I'm going to go right into the web. Yes. Which can also be very bad for the Tholian.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if the Tholian is close, you know, to the web, then you're going to be that closer than you want it to be. One quick thing, which is I counted up the amount of power. It's 32 points of power. 24 warp, 4 impulse, and 4 appers.
Yeah. Very low power for a two-thirds mover. Freddy's ship.
Oh, yeah. And it's, of course, when it comes to, like any other disruptor ship, the disruptors take quite a bit of power. Especially, you know, you have a two-thirds movement cost ship. So,
right.
And this is always the argument that you'll have when it comes to fast warp two-thirds movement cost ships versus movement cost 1 ships, and that is, where is the point of where you're actually benefiting from having a two-thirds cost ship versus a movement cost 1 ship when it comes to the differences in the amount of power that you actually generate?
Correct. At very high speed, the two-thirds mover has an advantage.
Exactly. So, and it's at the lower, and but of course, when you want to overload all 4 disruptors, that's 16 points of power. Now, of course, with that 16 points of power, you could 16 minus 4, so minus 20. Let's say, I'm just figuring out what's the top speed. If you just, you're overloading all four disruptors, you're not doing anything to the webcaster because maybe it's fully charged, and same for the phasers. That'd be 20 points of power. 20 points minus 32 minus 20 is 12. Now that's gives it, So I think that gives a speed of around 8. Let me think. Yeah, I think it's 18. I think I got that right. Because basically it'd be 3.5. Take the amount of power. And
now the other.
Yes.
The other thing is the Klingon has 9 points of non-warp, and the Tholian only has 8 points of non-warp. You lose a point there.
Right. Right. So, but if you take the Klingon ship, which has 39 points of power, overload all four, it has the same cost, which is 20. 39 minus 20 is 19, so its highest speed is 19 versus 18 of the Archaeotholian. Now that's the Archaeotholian is always going to go, the Archaeotholian is always going to go slower. And that's just because of the amount of power that's currently in the Archaeotholian versus one thing I was comparing it to was the LDR.
Now, the other thing is that the Klingon degrades slower because of damage.
Mm-hmm. That is true. Now, but then, of course, now you have the whole thing of hull, which is for the Klingon, you've got 4 boxes of forward hull and 8 boxes of aft hull.
Right.
Which, so...
I don't remember how much hull the Tholian has.
Give me a sec. 1, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. It's got 11 center hull. And of course...
Oh my.
Yes. Which, of course, what that means is that the batteries on a Archaeotholian will last longer.
Yes,
because it takes those who don't realize it by looking at the haven't looked at the DAC that carefully, compared to some others who are a little more experienced by playing many games of Starfleet battles. And that is that, as soon as you get down past the forward hull, that's when you start hitting batteries. And if you have no batteries, you have no reserve power, which can be problematic. Yeah. It reduces your flexibility for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
And that flexibility is pretty important, especially in terms of heading, of course. That's a normal usage. Of course, and then because of you're using disruptors, and disruptors can't be held. You don't want to overload disruptors if you have no guarantee. You don't want to overload disruptors unless you know for a fact you can get into overloaded range. Now, get into disruptors and overloaded range. Of course, we have the whole interesting thing, which always annoys the crap out of me. Love of Pedic annoys the crap out of me. And that is, of course, in the tournament, the Klingon gets the UIM. So it's got 1 to 5 hit all the way out to range 8. Now, obviously, the damage is the same if it hits. But it's got a greater chance of hit compared to the Tholian. The Tholian fires at range 8. It's got a 1-4 shot. If the Klingon fires, he's got a 1-5 shot. So,
slightly better.
Yeah, slightly better. It goes from two-thirds of a chance of hitting all the way up to 5/6. I think it's goes from like 67% chance to up to like over 80% chance of hitting.
It
If I got that right.
halves your chance of it halves your chance of missing.
Right, exactly. Which can be really critical. You know, that's why I always I hate that the Klingon gets that UIM, which does not has no possibility whatsoever to break down. Unlike the regular Lyran, not the LDR, has limited UIM, so you have a one shot. You can take advantage of it once.
One shot.
Which, honestly, I think is something that should be thought of maybe in the future for the Klingon. Not to say it has one shot, but has a limited number of shots that it can actually use the UIM.
Possibility.
But
Now, the other thing to keep in mind is, again, we look at power and the Klingon, it's got the four disruptors and its phasers. That's it for stuff for weapons that use power. Neo-Tholian has the phasers, the disruptors, and the webcaster and the web fist. So that's a lot of extra power on a ship that has a lot less power.
Agreed, agreed. And which is always the gotcha, and inevitably, you might have to do something which you really, really don't want to do against a Klingon, which is
Blown
stop,
out.
so that you can recharge everything. You know, it's like flying the Saltorian. The Saltorian has the same exact issue. Everything from particle cannons to web breakers, i.e., shield crackers, to phasers, all of them require power. It doesn't have a single weapon system, other than if you want to consider shuttles, that don't require power.
But the Celt has 40 power.
True.
And it's still sucking wind. Neo has 32.
Agreed.
It's a lot less.
Agreed, which is why some people like using the Neo-Tholian. It might not have the maneuverability of the Archaeo, but of course it has more power.
Now, the other thing you can do with the Neo is you might, well, the webcast, the snares require one point of power. Now, the webcaster can be charged with between one and five, or zero and five, depending. But and of course, they both have caps, which just helps.
Oh,
Well,
agreed.
not caps, but it's
Yeah.
effectively a cap.
Yeah.
That's another thing is that, let's say I'm going to put up a 5-hex web. I might just put it up with one point of power behind it, and then I'm just using that as something to slow down drones and or to block, because a one point of power in a web blocks weapons fire just as well as a 5 point of power in that web.
That's true, and which is, that's one thing actually. I'm not sure how many games you've watched, and I have to agree, I have not watched all that many Archaeothelion games. But my understanding of a lot of Archaeothelion games, because they have two snares versus one snare of the Neo, which is always an issue. And that is that you rarely see them actually recharging their snares. Now, I can understand them
Well,
doing that
against
against a Klingon. I don't think so. I can't imagine there's that many opportunities that where you actually need to put a snare up to, I'm assuming you would do it to snare some drones and slow them down. Because you can do either...
That's exactly what you would use it for.
One, you know, a 1-10-hex snare... Oh, sorry. A 1-10-hex web or a 2-5-hex web.
Yeah. And if you think you can get it right, you can do the 1-10-hex web, guide the drones into it.
Right.
And if you can set it up so that the drones have no choice but to go into it, into the snare,
right,
then that can delay those drones quite a bit.
Oh yeah, and that's why you would do that. And of course, because both the Neothelion and Archaeothelion have the same issue, which is the snares fire left side or right side. Then nothing fires directly, rear. When you fire the snare, you have to at that point side slip to have it.
Let me ask you a question. The Neothelion is a left or right, but nothing else.
For a snare,
now,
yes.
Now on the Neo, isn't it for the snare? Yeah.
Yes.
Now for the Arachio.
Archaeo.
Is one of them LR, the other is RRR?
No. One's left side, one's an L, one's an R.
Oh, it's left side and one's right side?
Well, no, left arc and right. One's right arc, one's left arc.
Oh, okay. So they're much narrower arcs on the Archaeo than the
same arcs that the Neo has, but the Neo it has one snare, which has left side. Oh, sorry, not left side. Left arc and right arc. So you can,
I know that. But the Archaeo, what's the arcs on the Archaeo? You have two snares. What are the arcs on them?
One's left. And then the other snare is right.
Okay, so each snare has half the arc of the snare on the Neo, but you've got two snares versus one.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, the other thing you can do is you can fire the snare. Let's say you've got the... let's say you've got the drones lined up and you're facing with your right side facing the drones.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say the drones are off your number 3 shield. Yeah. You can fire the right side snare, and let's say drone, you're in the same column,
mm-hmm, right,
as the drones.
Right, so they're directly
off your
aft.
Number 3 shield. But they're not directly aft. You're off your right side.
Oh, okay.
Number 3 shield, not number 4.
Oh, okay. In which case, what the whole idea
in
would
that,
be...
In launched, that hex run.
Yeah, which means what the whole idea would be...
And you,
okay, I'll let you go.
Yeah, and then you fire the snare, 1 hex, and then your next impulse, you turn left.
Correct.
And go right down that hex row. Those drones are gonna impact that web.
Right. And obviously snares in my mind are really effective against plasma. Because if you can get a 10-point snare for plasma, 10 hexes, 10 impulses is a lot to a plasma.
It's more than 10 hexes because it gives you a lot more time to run away. Yeah, it can be a lot more than 10 hexes, a minimum of 10 hexes, but
right,
that can make a huge, you're right, that can about take out any plasma. That's the one of the only non-phaser systems that is has any effect on plasmas at all.
Right, agreed. Have that, and then of course you have the PA mine.
Yeah.
Which
Those are the
the funny
only
thing about
two.
the funny thing about the PA mine, let me just make this real quick comment, which is that most Andromeda players, including myself, when they were facing plasma, it's a rare time that you ever select to use the PA mine versus using the T-bomb.
Yeah.
That's from experience there.
Oh yeah. But getting back to the Klingon and the
Yes.
Arakio.
Archaeo.
Yeah. So that snare is actually what's that? Yeah,
Archaeo.
Arakio
A
is that snare
R
is
C
actually very
H E
useful.
O. Archaeo.
Archaea, okay. Okay. You say potato, I say potato, whatever.
Yeah, but you're adding an A.
Any case. Okay. So, but
But
yeah, the snare is actually a very useful system.
yeah. Oh
And the
yeah.
threat of the snare is just as useful.
Right. So basically, with defensively, Archaea has a really good set of systems from the snare to the caster, and of course those three phaser threes, which are rear extended. So
Four of them.
yeah, four of them are rear extended, which means that as long as you're not coming, you're heading right down the teeth of the drones, which in theory you shouldn't be, because you don't want to be hitting your shield number one. You want it to be shield number two or shield number six, or possibly a rear shields, which let me just make a quick comment about that, which is originally the Archaeo had 30 all around shields, and then they nerfed it a little bit by making the rear shields, the rear half shields, 27 apiece. So they're not as bad as the 24s on the Klingon, but they still are weaker than they were a bit ago. I'm to this day, I'm not sure why they did that. No.
Somebody probably complained.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me. But yeah, so Archaeo has a really well defense-minded ship. Unfortunately, with the
That is
against the
true.
Klingon, you've got your scatter pack, which it only has six control channels on, unlike the Zinni, who has 12. And you only have two drone racks, though. Of course, you've got the ad rack and a couple dogfight drones in the ad rack, which can be helpful for subterfuge. It only.
Well, that's the other thing is that the Klingon has more power and it has less things that take power.
Right. Though, of course, the one thing about the Klingon has more phaser capacitors too. It's got a total of phaser capacitors of 10. Actually, that's the same. That's the same as that's the same as yeah. That's the same in the Archaeo, isn't it? Yeah. So, but it only has the five phaser ones. It's got the two phaser threes, and it's got four phaser twos, which are of course the waste phasers. Left rear, right rear. For those two pairs. Which makes things
You've
interesting
got
because
nine heavy.
invariably most unless you've got them in close, unless the Klingon is in close, the Klingon will never fire those phaser twos. They'll just use them as an additional battery, this capacitor for their phaser ones.
Correct.
And of course, the Archaeotholian, as we point out, everything is powered, except for the suicide shuttles, and even those are kind of powered.
I've heard it said that.
Yes.
Go ahead.
No. You go ahead first.
I've heard it said that the primary weapon for the Archaeo is its phasers, not its destructors.
Yep. That can be actually that. If you think about it, a lot of times that can be said also about plasma. Plasma-based ships, like the Gorn, where the whole idea of the plasma is not to hit with the plasma, it's of course mobile terrain. It's to control where your opponent goes, and of course, what the Archaeo has one of the most powerful weapons of them all when it comes to controlling where your opponent goes, which is, of course, the webcaster. Because, you can force him to go around it, or if he wants to, he can go right into it, but he's going to be stuck. So he can't move, which is one of the worst penalties. Not the worst penalties. One of the worst penalties if you cause him to break down. That would be the worst penalty.
Or use his head bonus.
Right. Because definitely, if you can make him use his head bonus, he's then less maneuverable right there.
Right.
So, but of course, like most ships that have basically the Tholian has some protection against drones that don't really cost them all that much. It costs them like a point of power. Big whoop.
Yeah, the stairs.
Right. But like any other opponent, when it comes to you have no seeking weapons versus seeking weapons, the one question that always comes to your mind is this. How do you play it? Do you assume that at some point you're going to have to stop Weasel, have the seeking weapons hit the Weasel, and then go off? And then then deal with being stuck at the very least speed 4. And,
Yeah.
Obviously, you can time it so that you can be speeds 4 for the minimum amount of time, and then boost it up to 14. If you time it right, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But the question is, do you do that, or do you fly fast? That's always the question that's the question I always ask myself. Every single time I've flown the Seltorian, when it comes to seeking weapons, how do I want to play this? Do I want to have those, be charging the wild weasels and know that at some point in the game, I'm going to have to stop and give up any advantage of speed and then have it hit my wild weasel, and then get the ship going again, get that speed up again, which is not easy because obviously when you're that slow and you have no flexibility in your speed except for being very slow and maybe slower or maybe a little faster, your opponent has all of the what's the word I'm looking for? Basically, he has the advantage. Because that's one thing, as they say, is speed is life when it comes to SFB.
Right.
Not initiative, that's it. The faster ship in SFB always has initiative. Yeah. Versus some other gaming system where initiative is considered, which is always, this always bothered me, which is that the systems where say, oh, the initiative, that's random, that you might actually have the initiative on somebody. No. To me, speed, having a faster ship, that seems to me, it has the initiative. But.
Yeah. Now, another thing you can do is you can go speed 4, put up a snare, and then launch the weasel and have the weasel charge the motionless drones rather than have the drones hit the weasel.
Right. Well, the good thing about that, obviously, is if you wanted to, you know, in that case, what you're doing is you're trying to get the drones to hit the web.
Yeah.
Then you can recover the weasel and then, you know, grab it and head off on the mighty way.
Well, depends how many drones the weasel is going to take out. If it's going to take out 6 drones, you probably don't want to recover that weasel.
Right. Oh, agreed. But at the same time, if the only reason to actually put up a web and then launch a weasel, in my mind, is to protect the weasel. Otherwise, if you don't want to protect the weasel, then why are you penalizing yourself? Because it's going to hit that web anyway. Because it's coming after you, and you're going to be still stuck at speed 4. You know, yeah. Versus, you know, keep up your speed, put down the web, and keep running as the drone hits the web.
That's true. But the web doesn't damage the drones.
Right.
Or let me ask a question.
But at the same time, as soon as you go with the snare. Right. Go.
What's that?
All I was going to point out was that as soon as you go, okay, you launch the drone. You put up the web, you launch the wild weasel. At that point, the drone's going to be targeted on that wild weasel. So it's going to run into the web, or you know, whether it's targeting you or targeting the weasel, at that point in time, you'll be around the same. At least in my mind. And
what speed do the drones have to be, or how much do the drones have to lose the speed for them to be damaged by the web?
Oh, that's a good question, and that's one I cannot answer off the top of my head. I'd have to look up the rules. I know they have a much.
I think 32 speed.
Yeah,
32 speeds are destroyed by web.
Yeah, I think it's like 20. I want to say 20 strength web will kill a 32 speed drone.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds about right.
Well, it's how many points of movement do you lose?
Yeah. But again, yeah.
So if it's based on your speed and the web's strength, and I don't know if it's different for ships and for drones.
Oh yeah, so I know. I feel pretty confident in saying that. Yes, it takes a lot more. I feel pretty confident saying that a drone the drone has to be a greater speed than a ship to break down.
Yeah. Or is it a certain point where it's like, okay, now I'm going to lose so many, take so many points of damage? Pretty sure if the web is strong enough, a 32-speed drone would be automatically destroyed by a web, I think.
Da, da, da. There it is. So I'm gonna just see if I can do a quick look-see. Web is what? Ba, ba, ba. No, it's too far up. Ah, yes, temporal elevator. Dun, dun, dun. Don't mind me. I'm looking at the rule book and trying to find it.
Yeah.
Ah, yes, the Romulan decoy. An interesting weapon. Which is interesting in that for a look, a Romulan cloak decoy. It's interesting in that it relies on the fact that cloaked ships are not completely invisible.
Right.
This is okay. Okay, I'm da, da, da. Don't mind me. I'm ESGs at the moment. Forget, because one it's like G9 or something like that. Don't mind me, I'm trying to find it. Okay, that's 13, which is cloaking device. That I know. Not sure what that means. Someone wrote that there's two schools on cloak ships. I'm not sure what that means. We mean schools of thought. That's possible. Okay. G10 looks like. Webs. Okay, deceleration caused by. Okay. Each point of speed causes one point of. Bah, 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 bah. When a ship enters a web. Bah, 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 bah. Okay, I'm just looking to see. Okay, drones and shuttles take one point of damage for each point loss over 20. I was right.
Over 20.
Over 20.
Okay.
While
So a
ships.
20-speed drone would not take any damage.
Right. Okay, right, and if okay, when a ship enters the web, if a ship loses 12 or more points of movement, that is, if a ship is moving a speed of 12 or more and the web has a strength of 12 or more, the ship must roll a breakdown as if it's a hit. So, yeah, so I was right, the drones have to be going at least. Has to be going greater than speed 20. So only 30, only if
Yeah, it's only fast drone.
the fast ones that it could actually kill.
20s are fine, they're undamaged. Yeah, 32s are instant death.
Right, if but that means that you have to have web strength of 20 or more.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's actually it have to be a well actually to destroy a drone it'd have to be 24 because of it takes one point of damage for every speed over okay no okay I'm getting it wrong okay no it has to be 20 and then it'll take 12 points of damage. took me a moment to realize the logic of the rules. So,
yeah,
no, but as I pointed out, you know, the whole thing with the wild weasel, you know, is that you wouldn't be using your web at that point.
Well, the point is the weasel destroys a drone. The web does not. It just delays it.
Right. Oh, agreed. Agreed. But as I mentioned, it all comes to what is going to be your strategy for dealing with the seeking weapons for this game. Are you going for speed? And yeah. You're going to say, eschew the whole use of wild weasels, i.e. save the power, or possibly put that power into seeking suicide shuttles? Or do you decide to go, no, I'm gonna have to stop at a certain point. I'm gonna get cornered or whatever, and plan for it and plan on, you know, for those wild weasels. Because if you plan on or stopping, then most probably you're going to need all four shuttles for wild weasels. You know, that's if you're planning on it. Now, if you go for the speed approach and it doesn't work out, you do have the option to switch. It takes a few turns, but you have the option to switch.
Right.
So, but you know, it's just like I do the same thing with Saltorians all the time, which is every single time I play a Saltorian against a seeking weapon, right, I say, am I gonna go fast, or am I gonna go slower, and assuming I need a wild weasel, in which case I'll go slower. You know, I'll have more power for the particle cannons, because particle cannons are those leaky capacitors that they have.
Yep.
So you might have 5 versus 3. Because if I'm going to go for speed, I only want to have the particle cannons loaded up for 3. So it only costs me 1.5 per. So instead of costing me 10 points of power, it costs me 6 points of power. So I can go.
Yeah.
You know. So every single time I play a Saltorian, I have to do that, and you do the same thing for the Archeo. Is what's your plan of attack? Because you have no seeking weapons, they have seeking weapons, whether it's the Klingon, the Romulan, the Gorn, or whatever. Now, obviously, the Archeothon goes against the Laren, then it's mostly, you know, you're definitely gonna be using the webcaster as a webcaster, and you want to use that to maintain distance, to really control the distance between you and the Laren. Now, of course, the tough part about that whole scenario is that if you put up the webcaster, the web too early on against the Laren, then you have the issue of it just canceled. That they're going to bring up the ESG.
Yeah. Although the web does block the ESG.
Right. That is the point, which always makes things interesting. There's the interaction of ESG and the web, because that one thing that can occur is that the Tholian gets next to the web. If the Laren goes into the web and he's generating ESG, it's not generating ESG past the web until he goes into the web. So at that point, the Tholian...
Right, but when the web goes...
Yep. Until, you know, the web goes away. But also, but if you go into the web, then, and you're generating greater than, you know, range zero, then the ESG, actually, you can have it so that the Tholian is inside the ESG.
Yes.
What's that? What the? To me, it's always one of those kind of neat, weird scenarios that can occur. I don't think it happens. I think it's a rare thing that occurs, because in some case you might not want to be that close to a Lyran. All depends.
Well, I'm falling asleep here, so I'm gonna
Understood. Well, it's about time
call it a
to
night.
wrap it up, because it's getting past the normal time that I wrap this thing up. So I'll let you go, and you have
Okay.
a good night.
I will.
Okay.
You too. Bye.
Okay. Bye. So, okay, Mad Cow. Excuse me. I see Mad Cow is on. Okay, I have something really want to show Paul in regards to improving the SFB Online. Did a bunch of good proof of concept coding, which is finished, and I just want need to record some quick vids and get them to Paul. Oh, awesome. But the Sisters of Fate seem to be big fans of Call for Fire and Kill My Computer. Okay. Yeah. Russ, I figured it was you, because I know you've sent me vids in the past. Yeah, if you can get me those vids, I would love to show them and comment on them, as part of the podcast. And hopefully, I'll do my best to those who are just listening in to describe what it is, and hopefully, with your permission, Russ, of course, that maybe well, actually, no, I was gonna say post the videos, but I just remembered that if I show the videos as part of the podcast, one thing I do is, Russ, in this case, you don't know this, which is I record, of course, for Twitch. But also, I post this video that I'm recording, live, with a minor trimming of the beginning and the end. Every once in a while in the middle, it depends upon if there's some junk. But I then post that up on YouTube. So, and Russ, I really I would love to see it, and I'm always interested in new ideas, new approaches, especially because. As I'm still, I've paused a bit on the work for improving the client and having it so it's more modern. I've paused it because the last thing that I've wanted to work on is the robot player, which it's going to take a bit of time. So, given that, that's where my delay is at the moment. And I'm sure some people actually prefer the delay, given that some of the things I've done, i.e., I fixed some of the issues with the cadet room. I've also improved the cadet room to be a little easier. And of course, what I really would like to do is that robot player is plug that into the cadet room. So that people can play against the quote-unquote the computer, have so the seeking weapons and the players, the cadet players, are automated systems, so they can just say okay, and even have it so that in my mind it's a you I can denote it when it comes to the SFB roles as a computer. What is a computer-controlled ship? The idea being that the computer-controlled ship always moves last. It's got a higher precedence, and therefore it always has initiative. And what I really I'm imagining to do for a cadet, which is have an automated system set up, so that when you move your ship, it then, you know, as a cadet, and then goes, it will automatically move all the rest of the pieces on the board. So you don't have to select, okay, move computer pieces. I might do that initially as a debug tool, but that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be very, yeah. Yes, Dave. Russ is back. And have it so that, you know, it's that simple. And I think a lot of people would love to have that. And I have to think about it and ask Steve Cole, because I know what I'd like to do. And I'm not, it's an idea to get people in, you know, to basically be able to use SAP Online without paying for it. And that is what I'd like to do. And I have to talk to Steve Cole about this, whether it's okay for him. Which, and that's, this is going to be after I improve the cadet room a little more, which is have the ability to play the cadet room, in the cadet rooms, for free. So that you can learn SAP and you can learn the client at the same time in that, and also, you know, as a learning tool. Okay. This will be interesting because Russ, just to let you know, on that whole big kerfuffle that happened many, many years ago, and just to let you know, I still have the logs. I have all the posts from back then, because that, it's just because of it's an older chat that was archived because of we wanted to clean up the board, because the discussion board can only handle so many messages. So I archived the whole thing. I'm in any way, shape, or form vindictive, you know, that I want to bring this up in the past and go, oh, let's see what you posted. No, that's not why I keep it. But, you know, it's, I guess in case of that, it's sometimes it's a good reminder of how heated things can get when people disagree so vehemently. Of course, I don't think we really need a reminder of that, given some of the political atmosphere that has happened in past years, to really accentuate that. Oh, okay. Yeah, Russ, just to let, okay, here's the, I'll be happy to send it to you. But here's the crux, in my mind, the core belief, because I'm a PIA person, pure impulse activity, and that is, the key point that I have had, that I had in that discussion. I'm pretty sure I was pretty good not to be too heated. I know other people weren't as careful. That's why we had to shunt it off. It was quite a heated discussion for quite a few days. I'm not sure. I forgot how long it lasted at this point. But anyhow, the key point is that the rules said all announcements were secret. And the issue is that Call for Fire enables metagaming. The whole idea of you saying, oh, I'm going to call for fire. Now, call for fire means, if you take it as its core, you know, is like, I'm calling for fire. So it's basically, it's telling your opponent, if you call for fire, they're telling your opponent in real life, do you have anything you want to do before fire? So that means if you're calling for fire and then go, oh, hey, wait a minute, maybe I should launch my drones before we actually exchange fire, because I might lose my drone racks. Now, it's a little different in SFB Online, in that you still can't do that. But at the same time, if you call for fire, your opponent could then say, well, since you're going to fire, I'm going to fire too. So it tells people that you're going to fire. Now, of course, then we get the whole metagaming and mind games thing, where you do a call for fire and you go, never mind, as a way of goading your opponent to fire. Versus, I had the system set up. I never tested it in the client, which is the idea of the most pure system when it comes to announcement of activities, which is every single person has to click next. That, i.e., that either they have to click activity or next. And when you click activity, you then can announce your activity. Each player clicks next. When they click next, that denotes I have no activity. I have no activity whatsoever. And I want to go on to the next impulse. Now, if one of the opponents clicks activity, no one else knows that they've clicked activity. No one knows that they clicked activity because of they're clicking activity or they're clicking next. None of this is announced. And until you get to the point where everybody clicks next, then, which means everyone's ready to go into the next impulse, there's always the possibility of activity after that point in the impulse segment, which you have previously announced activity. Okay, cool. I have to look up your email. Russ, I gotta look it up. But anyway, okay, it's getting late. I'm gonna wrap it up here. Thank you for helping me go down that lane, because it's been a while since I've talked about that discussion. And the counterpoint, the call for fire people, usually their counterpoint is like, well, we're just emulating what was done in real life. No, you're not. It's not quite what you do in real life. In real life, you do a call for fire and then someone might announce drone or whatever. So it's a little better, but not quite the same, you know, still. Anyway. Oh, okay. Great. Thanks, Russ. Actually, let me write that down right now. I apologize for those people that this is going to be a little bit of boring. Just make sure. I'm not going to announce it. Okay, got it all written down. Awesome. So I will go look for the archives and I will send them to you. So with that, I am Paul Franz and I bid you a good night.